You're listening to the Future of Finance podcast by UK Finance, a series exploring the latest trends in financial services, how they're changing, and how firms can equip themselves to face the challenges of tomorrow.
Hello, and welcome to the Future of Finance podcast series. In this series, we look at how technology is transforming financial services. And in this episode, we will explore how that transformation means a bank can now be built in 20 days, and what that means for future business models. I'm happy to be joined by Justin and Mike to discuss this further. Justin, can you introduce yourself and Judil?
Sure, happily. Thank you, Jonathan. My name is Justin Fitzpatrick. I am the co-founder and CEO of Judil. Judil is a company information platform, and what we do is provide a real-time view of any business. So we're working quite extensively with people in the financial services, insurance, and B2B tech industries to help them gain an end-to-end view of their small business customers and provide really high-quality, meaningful digital experiences for those businesses so that they can open bank accounts, get insurance, get underwritten for loans through a completely digital journey.
And Mike?
Thank you, Jonathan. My name is Mike Kennelly, and I'm a consultant with PwC here in London in the financial services sector. I've spent my entire career in banking, and I'm working closely with banks to help them with their digital transformation journey, do a lot of work in open banking, open API economy, and bring all of that knowledge to help my clients in this digital transformation journey.
Thank you, Mike. So if I can start with you, the theme for today is how to build a digital bank in 20 days. And this might seem like a crazy notion, but this is something that you've done a lot of work in and actually have experience of delivering in partnership with companies like Judil. So Mike, can you tell us about the idea and why you embarked on this as an experiment and what it's meant for the clients you work with?
Yes, Jonathan. Well, as I say, at PwC, we've got extensive experience of working through with our banking clients the transformation journey to digital. And it's a complex, challenging journey for banks. And we, through that process, we've learned quite a lot about the various different ways, ways that our partners are successful, partners that are less successful in terms of migrating toward the digital outcomes that they need. We also brought together a lot of knowledge to our clients on what's happening around banking at the moment with, obviously, it's the fintech capability that's available, the open banking regulations that's emerging, and the all of that rich content that's coming through from what I call the open API economy, and how all of that can be brought together to help banks undertake this digital transformation challenge. And it was through bringing all of that together that I decided that there was probably another route, an alternative route or an alternative way that thinking that would bring some of the key strengths of fintech, open API economy, open data, open banking, and the knowledge we had in terms of how to manage legacy transformation together. And took on the challenge of understanding how we would build a bank of the future. And it was through that piece of work that we managed to create a use case demonstration bank, really, for mortgages. And we were able to do that integrating a number of third-party capabilities to build a complete straight-through processing digital journey for mortgages. And we were able to do it really quickly. And I was really amazed how quickly it happened. We went from absolutely zero capability to having, you know, a live front-to-back platform built in approximately 3 weeks using, you know, two banking architects and a developer here at PwC. So that really opened my eyes to what the art of possible was, and we built upon that, and we're taking a lot of that leadership now through to our clients.
Thank you, Mike. So just to understand that, it was a team of two architects and one developer that was able to put this all together using the kind of bank of the future model that you were describing. Is that correct?
Yes, that's right. It's one of the key principles here is that we look to establish the solution through orchestration and integration of existing capability. So we're moving to this whole idea of low-code orchestration of customer journeys, where the bank effectively becomes the control tower, if you like, of that whole customer journey, and moves the customer through that process, aggregating the data sets that they need as they go through that journey, and pulling that data through added value capabilities such as Duo provide and other providers, and leveraging all of that capability to give the customer a complete digital end-to-end proposition. And as a barometer of what we were able to achieve there, we actually developed about 300 to 400 lines of code. We built a fully functional customer platform, a CRM platform, a digital onboarding, a biometric capability, core banking engine, and we're able to call out to information service providers and property valuation providers in that whole journey. So it's quite incredible to understand now what is possible if you leverage that type of model and are prepared to bring those third-party innovators into your solutioning process.
Thank you, Mike. And Justin, you're obviously part of that fintech ecosystem that Mike is describing. I'd be really interested to get your view on how that ecosystem is developing.
Yeah. So I think Mike picked up on a number of important themes, which we can expand upon, you know, open API economy being one, the importance of speed and being able to operate in a kind of low code, no code paradigm by bringing in, you know, third-party providers and integrating them very quickly. I've had an interesting sort of perspective on this and have seen how, you know, the fintech ecosystem, particularly in London, has evolved over the last 5 or 10 years. Initially starting with my experience at Innovate Finance, which is the voice of global fintech and serves as a sort of focal point for you know, how the fintech ecosystem is evolving, not just in the UK, but globally. And you know, over the last few years, I think there are a few things that I would sort of call out. One, as we've talked about, is this rise of the ecosystem and a move towards more of a platform-based model. You know, as Mike will no doubt be able to kind of go into great detail on, you know, banks previously owned the entire customer life cycle and all the parts that facilitated that out of necessity. And that was the status quo for a very, very long time. You know, it was on their technology, their products. You know, they had that point of contact with the customer. That no longer needs to be the case. You know, as we talked about, the components that you need in order to provide a digital customer journey and even product lines now has been federated to a much greater extent. And so, you know, now, you know, really the kind of model has shifted from, you know, owning everything and you know, kind of being the one port of call for every single financial product to actually being a kind of trusted advisor or platform where customers will come to you at specific life moments. And, you know, the bank then can take this role where, you know, they still operate from a position of great trust, but, you know, what they're doing is providing a great customer experience and solving for that life moment. And in some cases that might mean they're providing the ultimate product. In other cases, it might mean that they're going out to a partner to provide that product. But one of the things that I think a lot of people miss, and that's really, really important to understand, particularly when you're thinking about how ecosystems develop and evolve, is that they create adjacencies. And what I mean by that is that, you know, generally the business you're in today, if you move from a traditional operating model into an ecosystem-based operating model, the business you're in today is not necessarily going to be your main revenue driver in the future. And that creates a threat and a challenge, particularly for incumbent organizations, but it also creates a lot of opportunity. And one of the examples that I like to point to illustrate this point is Salesforce. You know, Salesforce's 2019 revenue was greater than the entire global SaaS market was just 10 years ago. And so, you know, Salesforce is a great example where they kind of pioneered a model, you know, in a very particular part of enterprise software, moving, you know, customer relationship management software from on-prem into the cloud. And by doing that and creating an ecosystem around that cloud, it's created all kinds of adjacencies, and the overall market has grown tremendously as a result.
Thank you, Justin. So I think, Mike, we seem to be getting to a place from what you've described and what Justin's described of a potential future business model which is platformized and then utilizes the skills and capabilities of fintechs and third parties like Judil to deliver particular business lines of a firm. Now, that seems to kind of fit into a vision of the future of digital banking, of a digital economy. Can you describe a little bit more about what that vision is for you and how you see the overall picture developing in the next few years?
I think one of the important points that I make to clients is that we don't live in what I call a digital economy. We live in a highly integrated digital economy, hyper-connected, actually, even economy. And that, by definition, means that customers will expect financial services to be integrated in a meaningful way into the use case journeys that they are utilizing on a day-to-day basis. And even though we've talked a lot about the fact that there's a lot of fintech capability that can deliver these integrated ecosystem platforms, it's also really important to remember that banks, commercial and corporate customers, will operate their businesses in the future on digital platforms that then they themselves have the ability to integrate directly to the bank. And that whole account integration, supply chain management piece is a significant change, will demand a significant change to the way financial services are delivered to that customer segment. So this whole, what I call wave three of digitization, talks really about a business to customer model. And within that model, partnership and collaboration are fundamental pillars of success in that future model. So if we look at today's model, we see, as Justin said earlier, banks managing their value chain front to back with relationship management, a relationship management model where they control everything across that value chain. Moving to a model where partnership banking, marketplace banking, is going to be a significant pillar of success there. Now, that's a significant change in itself for the financial services sector. The whole idea of being able to onboard partners directly into your value chain at speed and be able to operate financial service to your customer within a 24-hour type proposition, that describes a significant change down the line for banks. And getting banking ready for that type of evolution is what we're doing today with these ecosystem platforms.
Thank you, Justin. I'd be interested to get your view on this same issue. You know, the business model of Judil and the speed at which they're, you know, you're designed to integrate with a firm's systems, you know, is predicated on a future vision of how business models are developing with financial services. And of course, you'll have a view from your involvement in Innovate Finance. What's your sense of how things are moving along?
Yeah, so I wanted to kind of revisit a point that Mike picked up on, which is around the integration and the speed of integration and how that's become incredibly important as we move to more of a partner or kind of platform-based ecosystem model. Implicit in that is also a high degree of personalization. And so, you know, we can kind of think about this from kind of inside out, i.e. the perspective of the bank or the financial services provider and all of the, you know, capability that they want to build and, you know, that being one of the reasons why they partner with, you know, fintechs like us or others. But, you know, the flip side of this is really customer expectations and customer experience. And so when we think about, you know, what the future holds, you know, we actually already have an answer that has been foreshadowed by developments we've seen in other sectors of the economy. So, you know, when I kind of think about, you know, our industry, you know, we take it for granted now that as retail customers, we can get a fully native and personal, highly personalized digital experience. So I can, as an individual, open a bank account, get a, you know, get a loan, you know, all incredibly, incredibly quickly. And up until very recently, that hasn't been true if you're a small business. You know, if you're a small business, you're still sort of stuck 5 or 10 years in the past in terms of, you know, the experience that you can have with your financial services provider. And so I think that, you know, one of the things that's happened and one of the reasons why we see this trend accelerating around, you know, straight through processing, end-to-end digital experiences, a high degree of integration is that, you know, small businesses have kind of woken up and said, well, you know, I know what's available to me as an individual, you know, as a consumer, why can't I have that same experience as a small business? And so, you know, this is an area that we play in quite heavily because, you know, what we're doing as Doodle by bringing in all of this rich data and building insights on top of that about these small businesses is we facilitate and enable that level of personalization in a digital proposition that can ultimately scale. And, you know, there's been a lot of research done on this by, you know, no doubt, you know, PwC has reams of it, BCG, McKinsey. But, you know, there was a study from BCG that was released not too long ago, and they found that for every $100 billion of assets that a bank held, by providing increased levels of personalization, it had the potential to result in up to $300 million in additional revenue growth. Now, you know, I think these are the types of things that, you know, decision makers at large organizations find very encouraging because it sort of gives you, you know, very solid business reasons for embarking on these types of projects. And, you know, as Mike and I have been saying, you know, there are all kinds of reasons why it just sort of has to happen. However, you know, can't be taken for granted that this is going to be a smooth journey, particularly for incumbent institutions, because, you know, just because, you know, these new capabilities are available to them and just because they can provide a better customer experience or a better product, it doesn't necessarily always translate into, you know, more revenue because the existing business model could also fundamentally change. And you look at an industry like music, where you had, you know, digital music come in, you know, 10, 15 years ago, you know, the revenues associated with digital music are only just really starting to catch up to where physical music revenues were at their peak in the late 90s. So it's taken a full 20 years for this new business model and new way of consuming that product to kind of wash its way through the industry and you know, ultimately start to kind of surpass the levels where it was, you know, two decades ago.
Thanks, Justin. That's really interesting. I suppose, yeah, I'd be really interested to get your view, Mike, on that topic. Earlier you mentioned what you called wave three, which is, I think, firms moving into an ecosystem business model. But I'd be interested to get your view on where firms are now. You know, are we in wave two? What does wave two look like? And how are firms going to need to reassess their business models and how they operate and what they deliver to customers as they move into wave three?
Yes, wave two really is happening today in the majority of banks. In fact, all of the banks that I work with are deep into the digitization of their banking. They're effectively digitizing the existing business models and giving digital access to the existing products and services to their existing customer bases, really. Mm-hmm. And they're driving out costs through that process. So that process will continue to run its course, and in fact has to run its course in itself. So it's not as if, you know, we can move directly to wave three here. With, you know, this is a journey. Wave two business models effectively are those relationship centric business models that I talked about earlier. Wave three is, introduces a different business model where we're looking at customer journeys that might start outside banking, come into banking, move outside banking, come back into the banking platform, and the banks managing that whole customer journey. So, for example, the difference between selling somebody a mortgage and helping somebody to move out the home and buy a property. So you're moving, you're managing the whole journey for them, right through to actually even post-owning their property in some cases. Now, that type of business model also, as Justin was saying earlier, introduces the opportunity for banks to generate new revenue streams that they don't have today. And move away from being heavily dependent on, you know, interest-oriented fees, which, of course, in today's economic climate are under challenge with where interest rates are and where interest rates are likely to be in the future. So there are big opportunities for the banks to embrace that whole and wider customer journey type business model. In the corporate and commercial space as well, there's huge opportunities for banks to help their clients, move to supply chain management platforms where financial services will be more easily available to them, and for the banks to think about creating and, in fact, operating those supply chain platforms on behalf of their customers. So it completely changes the type of business model that a bank might be operating on. So what we're saying to banks is a huge opportunity for banks to be the control tower, the operator of those platforms. Because if they don't, actually, there is a potential threat to banks that they become the data supplier to those value chain ecosystem platforms. And that wouldn't be a good place for banks to end up, where they simply supply customer data and some of the regulatory compliant capability that new economy is going to need. Because I definitely believe that, you know, banks have a huge opportunity. Customers still really trust their banks, and they want their banks to provide and manage them through those customer journeys. So that's a key difference. But of course, it also means that, you know, as I said earlier, bringing third parties in to collaborate to deliver those types of services, that's a challenge. Extending the architecture outside the bank and making the bank's architecture more open to be able to collaborate with third parties, a huge set of challenges there. So it typically comes down, Jonathan, to a conversation of trust versus innovation. And I guess what I say to banks is, you know, you need to ensure that innovation wins, and that you deal with these trust issues. Once you deal with these trust issues, then, you know, you're going to be able to innovate much, much faster as you move into wave three. But when you're doing wave two, it's important to be aware that this is what wave three looks like, and you need to be able to be building capability into your platform that enables you to exploit that opportunity when it emerges.
Thanks, Mike. And Justin, I suppose I'd be really interested to get your view on a kind of similar question. Mike there has noted the conversations that need to happen at a senior level around understanding, okay, this is where we are in the process. We're digitizing. We're in wave two. We want to move to wave three, an ecosystem model. As someone who sits in a fintech, and so a little bit outside of financial services, you know, what would you say to firms about how they should consider approaching that move from just digitizing their existing business model to an ecosystem model which can offer them new opportunities? You know, what key message would you want to get across to the senior executives?
Yeah, I think it's kind of coming back to the point that Mike made really around how you navigate that transition from wave two to wave three. Wave two, you know, certainly from our perspective, has really been, you know, rebuilding a more efficient, you know, digital operating model for the bank, but it's effectively the same operating model they have today. You know, as you kind of start to think about a different type of relationship with the customer, you know, it takes bravery, as Mike kind of pointed out, to kind of, you know, balance off these sometimes competing tensions between, you know, being trusted and innovating quickly. You know, I think it's also important to note that, you know, the neobanks, the challenges in this space have a similar, are confronted with a similar set of challenges almost in reverse, right? And the way that I describe it is that, you know, there's a difference between being liked and being trusted. So, you know, somewhere in there, and as you kind of weigh up the competing priorities around, you know, innovating quickly, trying to build trust, you have to be thinking about, you know, that model that you're ultimately tracking towards. Now, the thing that sort of makes all of this a little bit more of a kind of live issue and add some pressure to it is that, you know, these disruptions kind of go quite slowly until they don't. And what I mean by that is that you can be kind of inching towards this new world, but, you know, at some stage there's a tipping point where, you know, if you haven't prepared yourself for it, you're sort of the odd one out. And this again is a kind of important thing that I think a lot of people miss around disruption. And, you know, you can look at a business like Uber as an example of this, right? You know, Uber isn't doing anything fundamentally different than, you know, the previous model of getting a cab or you know, renting a car or whatever. But what Uber did, and they don't have any kind of, you know, proprietary technology really to speak of. A lot of, you know, what they've built has been put together using you know, widely available kind of third-party, you know, applications and technology that they've been able to integrate. But, you know, what a business like Uber does well, and this is what, you know, a lot of disruptors do well, is they fundamentally disrupt the customer experience. And in doing that, they use technology to disrupt the business model. And so that's why it's so important that I think people have one eye on the business model that they're tracking towards. The biggest challenge that I think a lot of incumbent organizations have is that, you know, they get this, you know, conceptually they understand that this is likely where the market's going and that they need to be proactively transitioning their organization so that it's in the right shape, you know, when this becomes the norm. However, the big challenge always ends up being cultural. And how does an incumbent, which has been attached to a highly successful model for decades, if not longer, fundamentally change the logic of their business? And there's a really cool blog that I came across by a Stanford business school professor, and he's talking about an app for sharing photos. And you're sort of reading the first couple paragraphs of this going, yeah, I know what he's going to say. It's going to be Instagram. And, you know, the big reveal sort of two paragraphs in is that actually this was Kodak, a division of Kodak in South America back in the mid to late 90s. Right. And so, again, it just illustrates that point that, you know, people are, you know, kind of understand where the market is going. It's then comes down to an ability of the organization to have the institutional will to fully commit to it.
Thanks, Mike. And on that point, I know that you've been working with a few clients on the kind of business model and the technology architecture that you've been describing in this podcast and how you would build a bank in 20 days with that. Are there examples that you can perhaps share of what good practice from a culture perspective looks like that are enabling firms to perhaps move more quickly than others?
Yes. I do also want to share with you a story that we've involved recently with one of our banking clients during the COVID crisis, early part of the COVID crisis, to help distribution of loans to companies affected by the COVID crisis. And we used this model, and actually we were working together with GitHub as well, to build a loan onboarding distribution platform at a rapid pace. And we were able to use this platform that we've created here, PwC, and created that platform within 3 weeks, and actually went live within 3 weeks. So it's testament to the fact that it is possible to be able to build these ecosystem platforms and deliver at rapid pace. And that actually, that experience actually, also drove out a number of learnings for us in terms of some of the cultural and organizational practices that you know, are needed to be able to build these types of systems. And you know, some of those are, first of all, you know, the rapid decision making that is needed to be able to turn around the system in that type of time frame. And the system itself enables that decision making, because the system itself is able to demonstrate to you on a daily and weekly basis what the capability now looks like. And bringing that to life in front of decision makers is really important. You don't, I know agile capability allows you to do an element of that, but it still takes a number of weeks before we get to an end point. With this type of model, we're getting to that end point, you know, within days, within a week, and then we're refining. And so, you know, being able to break through those bureaucratic decision-making processes in an organization is really important to be able to deliver these types of solutions at pace. Culturally, of course, there needs to be a willingness to collaborate with the partners, and there needs to be an open door in terms of being able to take that innovation from outside and drive the outside innovation into the bank. And that's actually quite a turnaround in terms of ways of thinking for banks today, because banks today, in my experience, still are very much inward, inside out in terms of their innovation, their thinking, the way that they think about delivering capability to their customers. So it turns that model on its head. But it's really important, I think, that across the organization, all members of the organization have a really strong concept of what digital propositions and capability is, and that we, you know, we are all working together to ensure that what the customer experience that we're delivering is exceptional. I think that's a fundamental principle.
Thank you. And I suppose, you know, on that note, what I'd like to pick up next is, of course, now that you've actually successfully delivered what you're proposing, which is, you know, a platform model using open APIs and partnerships with third parties to basically build a digital offering. What has the response been, you know, first perhaps to Mike and then to Justin, when you've talked through the project with people and their reaction to what you've been able to deliver at such quick timescales?
I've had a really fantastic response. In fact, I'm inundated with requests from all over the world. And one of the things about working in a virtual environment is that there's no expectation you're going to have to travel anymore. So we get a lot of opportunity to work virtually with our international clients. So globally, I've been really, really busy over the last 3 or 4 weeks talking about ecosystem banking to banks all over the world, actually. With a very positive response. It comes back again, I guess, once you get into the detail of how you move the organization to a different way of thinking and a different way of working. Because the tech is definitely different, but fundamentally it's a way of thinking and a way of working. And of course, banking is significantly a highly regulated industry with a significant number of controls that are required by the regulator to be in place. And whilst we can digitize a lot of that process, a significant amount of that isn't going to go away. So there's still quite a lot of rigor and quite a lot of controls that need to be satisfied before solutions can go live in banking. But it requires significant innovation to be able to build these solutions, satisfy those controls, and get the decision making that is needed to be able to deliver these types of systems where it is possible.
And Justin, has there been similar feedback to things on your side as you've discussed this partnership with some of your clients?
Absolutely. Yeah, I would strongly echo what Mike has just highlighted there. I think that the change that we've seen is that, you know, a lot of organizations have known for some time that they would need to undertake this type of digital transformation program. And up until now, they've been sort of working their way through the list, you know, prioritizing the things that they perceive to be either easier or more significant in their business, as you would. But I think one of the things that, you know, COVID in particular has highlighted is the need to accelerate these timelines. And, you know, we're having conversations with a lot of clients now, not just in, you know, the banking industry, but in insurance and other parts of the financial services industry, where, you know, they probably had some vague plan to tackle this in, you know, 2021, 2022, and, you know, all the timelines have been pulled forward by 6 or 12 months. So I think the response, you know, has been quite good, and it's, you know, they're taking comfort from the fact that, you know, you really can kind of, if you commit to it, create a real difference in a relatively short space of time. Now, one thing I would say, just as a bit of a counterbalance to that, is that, again, coming back to this issue of culture and just sort of institutional will, you know, we've seen organizations get much more comfortable with the idea of doing these projects either on the side or sort of in parallel with their existing business. Now, there have been some notable examples of our clients who have gone for the sort of wholesale, you know, refactoring of the core banking proposition and really focused on digitizing that. But I would say that more often you find organizations that are either, you know, trying to test the waters around this type of stuff by spinning up new initiatives or creating a digital challenger that will run in parallel for some time alongside the existing, you know, core banking proposition. And, you know, what's going to be really interesting to see over the next, you know, 1, 2, 3 years is, you know, as these platforms become more common and as the, you know, digital challenger brands, whether they are, you know, kind of neobanks or the digital challenger brands of the incumbents start to gain more traction, you know, what that does to the efforts to kind of modernize the core kind of part of the organization.
Yes, absolutely. I think, you know, one of the reasons I found today so interesting was just that provocative idea that while this may have been something that firms considered as a future prospect, actually through what we've described today, actually that opportunity is here and it's now. And the interesting thing will be for firms how they consider that, given all the things they have to balance, how they take on board what this ecosystem wave 3 evolution will look like. So I'd just like to say thank you very much to Justin and to Mike for all of their comments. Justin, if people want to reach out to you, learn more about the work of Doodle, what's the best way for them to contact you and contact Doodle?
So people can visit www.doodle.com. That's D-U-E-D-I-L.com. And on there, there's a whole bunch of information on client case studies, you know, the different solutions that we have for our target industries of financial services, insurance, and B2B tech, as well as a developer portal with, you know, pretty comprehensive API documentation and the ability to test out, you know, with in a sandbox environment or with live data. So, you know, we want to try to encourage people to you know, start this journey now and begin experimenting and seeing what they can come up with.
And Mike, if people are interested in learning more about the models that you've described, what's a good way of them reaching out to you if they want to hear more or discuss with you?
Clients can will already be probably working with PwC in some form, either through our audit practice or consulting practices. So reach out to your PwC representative and ask for me or ask for somebody who can talk about ecosystem banking. Alternatively, they can visit our UK website, pwc.co.uk, and visit the financial services web pages there. And there's a section on ecosystem banking available there, and my contacts are on that page.
And with that, I'll say a thank you again to Justin and to Mike for the provocative and interesting ideas you've shared with us over this podcast. To the audience, thank you very much for joining us, and I look forward to joining you on another podcast soon. Goodbye.
Thanks for listening to the UK Finance Future of Finance podcast. For more information, please visit ukfinance.org.uk/podcasts.